ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवदुत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। Text, are we doing 10 and 11 or 9 and 10? Oh, okay. Am I in the right? Oh, here. Got it. Sorry. E mata krishnera divya shadguna ananta. Brahma Shiva Shanakadi Napaya Janra Anta. E Mata Krishnera Divya Shadguna Ananta. Brahma Shiva Shanakadi Napaya Janra Anta. Others? E mata krishnera divya shatuna ananta. Brahma Shiva Shanakari Napaya Janya Anta.
E mata krishnera divya shatuna ananta.
Brahma Shiva Shanakadi Napaya Janya Anta.
Brahma Shiva Shanakadi Napaya Janya Anta.
Word meanings. Emata. In this way. Krishnera. Of Lord Krishna, Divya, transcendental, Satguna, spiritual qualities, Ananta, unlimited, Brahma, Lord Brahma, Shiva, Lord Shiva, Shanaka Adi, the four Kumaras and so on, Na, not. Paya, obtain. Yanra, of which? Anta, the limit. Translation, the spiritual qualities of Krishna are also unlimited. Great personalities like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the four Kumaras cannot estimate the spiritual qualities of the Lord. Let's also chant text 11. Gunatmanaste pi gunan vimatum.
Gunatmanaste pi gunan vimatum.
Hita vatirnasya ka isharesya.
Hita vatirnasya ka isharesya.
Kalena yairva vimitaksukalpair.
Kalena yairva vimitaksukalpair.
Bhupanchavake mihika yubhasaha. Gunatmanaste pi gunan vimatum.
Gunatmanaste pi gunan vimatum.
Hita vatirnasya ka isharesya.
Hita vatirnasya ka isharesya.
Kalena yairva vimitaksu kalpaya.
Kalena yairva vimitaksu kalpaya.
Bhupanshava ke mihika dvipasaha.
Bhupanshava ke mihika dvipasaha.
In time, great scientists may be able to count all the atoms of the universe, all the stars and planets in the sky, and all the particles of snow, but who among them can count the unlimited transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He descends on the surface of the globe for the benefit of all living entities. Please repeat.
In time,
great scientists may be able to count all the atoms of the universe.
All the stars and planets in the sky.
And all the particles of snow. But who among them can count the unlimited transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He descends on the surface of the globe for the benefit of all living entities. Purport. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14, verse 7. So, let me read the purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples of this verse.
Some of the purport forward, not necessarily.
Say that again?
Some of the purport are translated by Prabhupada. Like, for example, next verse also. They just brought it in.
Some of the purports, Srila Prabhupada already said these things or wrote these things, and they're just incorporating them. Purport. It is difficult for conditioned souls to understand all the transcendental features of the Supreme Lord. Right, no, that's the wrong purport. Like 7. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Lord Krishna is Gunatma, the soul of all superior qualities, because he gives them life. For example, one may discuss in an abstract way such qualities as generosity, intelligence, and mercy, but they come to life only when a living person exhibits them. Thus, Lord Krishna is Gunatma because he descends to the material world and reestablishes the religious principles by exhibiting all godly qualities himself and inspiring them in others. A living entity who develops the transcendental qualities found in the Lord receives immeasurable benefit and eventually goes with the Lord back to his own abode, where all living beings are liberated and fully endowed with the transcendental nature. Srila Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. The example is given here that even if the most learned scholars could someday count the particles of earth, snow, and light, they would still fail to understand the qualities of the Lord. In this example, earth, snow, and light are progressively more subtle. Thus, it is to be understood that there is an increasing difficulty in counting their virtually infinite particles. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, great personalities like Lord Shankarsana actually have counted the number of atoms on the earth and even the molecules in the entire universe. Yet even such a personality as Shankarsana, who has been continually chanting the glories of the Lord since time immemorial, has not even approached a final count of those glories. Lord Krishna exhibits his most astonishing qualities during his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, where he steals butter from the cowherd ladies, dances with his girlfriends, and plays with his cowherd boyfriends as their most dear companion. Although appearing like ordinary human activities, such sublime pastimes embody Lord Krishna's immeasurable and innumerable beautiful transcendental qualities, which are the life and soul of pure devotees. Dhyupasaha is the illumination of stars and planets. Right. Gunatmanaste pi gunan vimatum hita vatirnasya ishresya kalena yairva vimitasu kalpaya bhupangshava ke mihita dhupasaha. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militangena tasmai shri guruve namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvetam Savatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitam Sa He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So last week we heard Lord Chaitanya explaining to Sanatana Goswami the inconceivable greatness and expanse of the spiritual sky. Even Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma can't estimate the length and breadth of even a single spiritual planet. And in each planet, the Supreme Personality resides, along with the innumerable inhabitants who also have the full opulence like the Lord himself. And in just one corner of that vast spiritual sky, there are an infinity of such infinite spiritual planets. So now, in verses 10 and 11, Lord Chaitanya is saying that the qualities of Krishna are also unlimited and inconceivable. Just like the opulence and expanse of the spiritual sky, so Krishna himself, his qualities are unlimited and inconceivable. Yesterday in Bhagavatam class, Srila Prabhupada quoted the Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, verse 2, Name viduk suraganaha prabhavanga maharshaya ahamadir hidevanam maharshinam chasarvashaha. In the 10th chapter, Krishna explains that that he's the origin of even Lord Brahma himself, of the four Kumaras. From Lord Brahma we know by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam up to before the 10th canto, we've already gotten the impression of how Lord Brahma creates the secondary creation of the universe. And so the seven sages and all the demigods, they can't really know the opulences of Krishna. He's their origin in every respect. He's also the origin of all the qualities of all the living entities in the material world. And he says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that one who knows his opulence and his mystic power worships him without deviation. That much is certain. Yomam evang asamudho janati purushottama. No, I'm sorry. Well, that's text 8, but what's text 7? Anyway, it says there, his opulence and his yoga, sovi kalpana yogena, natra sanshaya, yajate natra sanshaya, something like that. Anyway. I thought I knew that whole chapter very well, but I guess I don't. And then, of course, he says the four seed verses, and then Arjuna declares that he's the supreme pure and everything he said is true, and then asks him how we can understand how Prabhupada says, we know that God is great. Oh, maybe I can speak closer. You can't hear? Is this better?
That's better.
Okay. So Srila Prabhupada says, we know that God is great, but do we know the details? How great is God? So in chapter 10, Krishna is explaining the details. Arjuna says, Keshu, Keshu, Chabhaveshu, how can I think of you, Chintyosi, how can I think of you and your greatness? And Krishna starts to explain how all the things in this world, whatever's great, he's the greatest of every category, and that ultimately he says that these are just the details, but really by for just a spark of himself, he pervades the entire creation. And that anything that's beautiful or powerful or opulent in the world is just a tiny spark of his splendor. So here, Lord Brahma, well, we know the pastime that Lord Brahma knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devas came to Lord Brahma, Mother Earth came, said she was overwhelmed by all these, the burden of these demons. And so they sought the help of Lord Brahma, who went to the shore of the Milk Ocean and meditated, and within his heart received instructions from Lord Krishna that he gave to the devas, saying that Krishna would be appearing very soon to relieve the burden of the earth, and they should all go take birth on the earth to help assist in his pastimes. And and then when he saw that, so he couldn't, Lord Brahma couldn't always just see Krishna whenever he wants. He has to go and like Krishna says in the end of the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that even the devas find it very rare to see him in this beautiful human-like form with two hands that he was showing Arjuna. So when he saw that Krishna had killed Akahasura demon, he thought to himself, I want to get some darshan of Krishna. I want to understand something about Krishna's mystic opulence. And he devised this trick that Krishna and the cowherd boys were taking lunch in this nice soft grass by the river, Yamuna, and they had let the cows loose to graze on this beautiful sweet grass. And the cows had begun going off into the forest of Gokula because the grass was very nice over there. And the cowherd boys then said, "What? Where are the calves?" Did I say cows? They were calves. This was still the end of Krishna's Poganda, right before his Kumara age. Or did I get that backwards? I think I'm right. But anyway, Krishna told the cowherd boys, "Don't worry. You stay here. I'll go get the calves. You enjoy your lunch. I'll be back shortly." But Krishna really knew what was going on. Lord Brahma had taken the calves, and while Krishna was gone from the cowherd boys, he took all the cowherd boys and he put them asleep by his mystic power in a cave. He didn't hurt them at all, but he wanted to see what Krishna would do. And when Krishna came back and saw that the calves and the cowherd boys were gone, he began to think, well, what will all the parents, all the elderly residents, the gopas and gopis, think if I'm just come back alone? And he expanded himself into all the cowherd boys and all the calves. And then a remarkable thing happened. All these cowherd boys and calves, they all had their own forms, their own colors, personalities, different characteristics, and Krishna exactly copied every one of them. But when their parents, when the cows and the elder gopis and gopas saw their offspring, they felt special affection. So Krishna can accomplish more than one thing at a time. On the one hand, he's defeating Brahma by the display of his own mystic power, and also he's giving the opportunity for all the cows and older gopis and gopas to actually have Krishna directly as their child. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should not think of trying to become Nanda Maharaj or Mother Yashoda. Those positions are already taken. He says that to think that I'll become Nanda Maharaj is a form of impersonalism, actually, that you don't accept that Krishna has these eternal mother and father already existing. But you can follow these elderly residents of Vrindavan if you want to experience that mood of devotional service. And And Krishna himself expanded into unlimited cowherd boys and calves, and their parents got to, for a whole year, got to have Krishna himself directly as their child. And when Brahma came back, in just a moment of his time, which was a whole year, he saw, to his astonishment, that all the cows and calves were still there. He knew that they were sleeping in a cave, so how were they there? And then these cowherd boys and calves turned into four-armed Lord Narayans. You know, Lord Brahma's own father. Lord Brahma was born from the flower, from the lotus navel of Narayan, and now he was seeing that Narayan himself was, you know, many, many, many Narayans were all worshiping baby childhood Krishna, and they were circumambulating him along with, the Narayans themselves, along with all the many, many Brahmas and Shivas and demigods and all the elements, so that even every pieces of straw and everything were circumambulating Krishna. And all this is described in chapter 13. And then when Brahma became totally bewildered seeing this vision, then Krishna, having mercy on him, all the Narayans and everyone entered into Krishna's own body, and he was sitting there in front of Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma fell down like a yellow stick, as described, or a golden stick, because that's Lord Brahma's color, and he fell down like a rod, and his four helmets touched Lord Krishna's lotus feet, and he began offering these prayers. And so this is one of the prayers. And so this Srimad Bhagavatam is such wonderful literature that, you know, you're seeing the personality, Lord Brahma himself, who is the speaker of the four Vedas, come out of his mouths, his four mouths, and he's the engineer, the creator of the whole universe. Everything comes, the secondary creation all comes from him. He creates all the different species of life in all the planets. He creates the planets themselves and the different... this is described in the third canto. You're reading about the creation and how Lord Brahma creates everything. And he himself is totally bewildered by this little child, Lord Krishna. And he starts to glorify Krishna in different ways in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. And in this one verse, he's describing how Krishna's qualities are unlimited and transcendental, and they couldn't be understood even if you understood the particles of light coming from the stars, or every single, we often say that, oh, every snowflake is an individual, but even if you understood every single snowflake or every atom of the earth, and you still couldn't understand Krishna at all. So, on the one hand, he's describing the unlimited, inconceivable nature of Krishna's qualities. And like he says later on in this chapter, he says, there are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. So no one can think that they can actually know everything about Krishna, not even Lord Brahma, you know, against whose mental power, power of understanding, intelligence, you know, all human beings are puny and insignificant, you know, not to mention the greatest scientists and the greatest philosophers. You know, they couldn't hope ever to have the intelligence of Lord Brahma, in this lifetime at least, unless they become born as a Brahma someday. But still, Lord Brahma himself says he can't count the glories of Krishna. And even Lord Shankarshan, we read, you know, he's trying to glorify Krishna unlimitedly from the beginning of time. Lord Ananta Shesha, with his thousand heads and thousands of mouths, is never reaching the end of Krishna's glories. So that's one thing that it's saying, is how totally beyond the reach of any conception, how infinite are Krishna's glories. And another thing he's showing in this verse is that Krishna is not going to be understood by mental speculation. By studying the elements. When I was a teenager, before I joined the movement, I was studying physics at the University of Miami. I was thinking that I wanted to know the truth about the world and everything, and I thought, because I was a materialist and I was infected by this atheistic mentality of my country at that time, everything, I thought that to really understand the secrets of truth of everything would be to understand matter and energy and how they interact. But that kind of study will not help us. It's so limited. I mean, it doesn't explain psychology, it doesn't explain our emotions, our experiences, it doesn't explain what is beauty, what is justice, any of those things. It's there's this fact-value dichotomy that is said to have disenchanted the world. Some people have written about the re-enchantment of the world by getting back to understanding or thinking about qualities. And so Lord Brahma is also saying that mental speculation or this kind of activities, even Vedic study, sacrifice, charity, are not the way to understand Krishna. Krishna declares in Bhagavad Gita that only by unalloyed devotional service can he be understood. He tells Arjuna at the end of the chapter on the universal form, chapter 11, he shows Arjuna, at Arjuna's request, he shows him the universal form that he, Krishna himself, is everything in the universe, all the demigods, all the demons, everyone is there within his form. And then Arjuna feels his mind is perturbed and he's feeling frightened. And Krishna then appears with his forearm form showing that he is Narayan, Vishnu. And then again after that he appears in this beautiful human-like form, which is said to be extremely beautiful. And he says that even the devas don't rarely get to see this special form of mine that you're getting to see. And only by unalloyed devotional service can you see this form. In chapter 18, Krishna says also, what's the verse again? That only devotional service, Vishite Tadanantaram, Tatomam Tatito Gyatva Vishite Tadanantaram. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashashmi tatvataha tatomang takutot gyatva vishite tadanantaram. So Krishna is only understood by pure devotional service. That's a fact. Narada Muni tells Vyasadeva that the ultimate goal of all cultivation of knowledge, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Vedaischa sarvaya hameva vedyo, that all the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. And Narada Muni says, Idang hi pungsa tapasa shrutasya vaha svistasya suktasya chibuddhi natatayaho avichitertam kavibir nirupito yad uttama shloka gunanu varnanam. That all the purpose of all the different aspects of cultivating knowledge, including austerity, sacrifice, charity, study of the Vedas, and mental speculation, everything culminates in hearing or singing the glories of Krishna, who's praised with selected transcendental verses. So Lord Brahma also explains that in chapter 14. The famous verse, Stanes Tita Shruti Katan Manubhak, that one should simply give up all jnanam prayasam. One should give up all the attempts at understanding the world through one's own speculation and one's own endeavor at study and so forth, and simply submissively, in the right attitude, with body, mind, and words, one should hear the transcendental topics of Krishna, as Krishna explains himself or as his pure devotees explain him. And that Krishna, who is unconquerable, becomes conquered by that. That we can't ever understand Krishna fully, but only the devotees can understand a little bit about Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna continually tells Arjuna that I'm explaining these confidential things to you because you're my friend, because you're my devotee, because you're never envious of me. He even says that you can't even try to explain this confidential knowledge of the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita to someone who's not austere, who's not devoted, who's not engaged in devotional service. And therefore, we can understand that all commentaries by non-devotees are completely useless. So many people write commentaries on Bhagavad Gita and they say all kinds of things other than about Krishna and other than about devotional service. They don't understand anything about it, nor can they, because they're not devotees. Being a devotee is the only way to understand Krishna, his opulence, his sweetness, and seeing Krishna in his form there. In this chapter 14, Lord Brahma goes on to glorify the Brijvasis. That he makes it clear that it's Krishna's form in Vrindavan that is super excellent. And that Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan, he talks about how his greatest good fortune would be to take birth in any kind of form, even as a plant or something, or animal in Vrindavan, and get the dust of the feet of Krishna's special devotees there. And he says that he and Shiva and the different predominating deities in the senses are actually tasting, because they're the deities of the senses, they can taste what the Brijvasis are tasting with their senses, and he says that that's their great fortune. The Brijvasi senses are like the cups through which they drink the nectar of Krishna. So one time I was on the internet, I was talking to a Sri Vaishnava who was trying to convince me that really Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu and that Vishnu is the original supreme. And so I was explaining to, I quoted the verse, Ete Changsakala Pumshang, you know, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, but he was ready for that. You know, these guys, he was a scholar and he was used to arguing with Madhvas all the time. And he had an explanation of why that verse doesn't mean that Krishna is the original avatari. So then I started talk from chapter 14. I had the Veda base and I was taking the Sanskrit out and putting it there where Lord Brahma says that you're the original source of Narayan. And then when he started talking about how the Brijvasis, you know, he was trying to answer everything I said. And when I started quoting the verse about how the, you know, his highest good fortune would be to take birth in Vrindavan, he was completely stumped, and he said, I'm not sure, I have to go back and check. Those verses might not really be in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, he said that. He said, you know, because I was just giving him the Sanskrit that he could read, and then I was explaining, and this fellow was actually becoming convinced that that's what it meant. So then he couldn't accept that it was actually there in the Bhagavatam. But anyway, there's no literature anywhere like Srimad Bhagavatam and this Brahma Vimohana Lila, and then these beautiful prayers of Lord Brahma are full of rasa. There, he's feeling so much gratitude that even though I've come and offended you by playing this trick to see your qualities and you know, and you've completely humiliated, defeated me, that my mystic power is just like nothing, like a glowworm and compared to the sun of your mystic power. And he says, even then you're showing the mercy on me that you're appearing before me in this very beautiful form and I'm beholding you this way. And there's nothing like, and it's Lord Brahma, and you have to understand who Lord Brahma is, of course, and then you get the full impact of this episode of Krishna's pastimes. So I think I'll stop there and open it for discussion at this point. Yes. Sri Devi? I liked your class the other day, by the way. Very nice.
Thank you so much. It seems like the physicists are obsessed with trying to find out like what, how the universe works and how it's made up. It seems like that's their like main thing. If you could speak a little bit about that, and then, but they can't get to the truth, and they're always trying to find like what's the smallest particle. And I think recently they found something called like the God part, and was, they called it like the God particle because they couldn't understand it. Or if you could, if you know anything about that.
I didn't really, I remember, it was some years ago, I remember that they were talking about the God particle, and I don't know, I didn't study why they were calling it the God particle or what it was. I don't know, the Higgs boson or something like that. But my realization is that that when, you know, historically, at least in Europe, there was this, you know, fracture in the church, and the authorities started fighting with one another. I mean, it used to be considered that theology was really the queen of sciences, and those who, the people in the guilds who, you know, made things and stuff and knew the arts of how to make, you know, blown glass and sculptures and things like that, were considered, you know, they were craftsmen, and that the real minds were those who contemplated God in the churches. And but when the authority of just hearing about God was proving to be that these were hypocrites and not real authorities and they couldn't agree on anything, people began to look for the real truth in something they considered more solid proof. And the rationalists like Descartes and Leibniz and Spinoza were trying to create a structure of philosophy just based on their own, you know, which you couldn't deny, just based on their own reason. And then others were trying to actually look at, like Galileo, actually Descartes himself was also really a scientist. I mean, his science was very rudimentary compared to modern science. He had all these, he wrote this famous book, Principia Philosophia, which was, you know, about the physics of his time, which for about 50 years was, you know, until Newton came along, was the main authority on physics, and then Newton wrote the Principia Mathematica. I think that it's because people didn't have great authorities about God to hear. They didn't have Srimad Bhagavatam to hear. And then, you know, people developed this idea, it's Kali Yuga, we can't trust anybody's authority. People are lying to us all the time. You get on the internet and there's a scam every minute, and people are always trying to call you on the phone and say that, you know, they're a Nigerian prince or whatever. And everybody's trying to scam everybody. So people feel like, well, what we can perceive with our senses, at least, we can't deny that. That's proof. And the other thing is faith. And eventually, you know, those who were studying nature were able to succeed in technology, which was necessary. How do you have to know where your cannonball is going to fall? You know, the way Aristotle had explained motion and things like that was very less competent than, you know, what Galileo and these guys were, and then Newton were able to do. And this became the model of really understanding cosmology, and understanding everything would be based on this human endeavor, this, what do you call it, ascending knowledge, based on we can find these things are true, and then we can find these. But it still involves faith in authorities. Nobody knows all of the details and everything. They hear from someone else and then they build on that, but they don't go back and do all the experiments and do whatever. And they can't, and this method can't reach this understanding of Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada often said Krishna consciousness is a science. There's a science of God, knowing all the different kinds of incarnations and everything that Lord Chaitanya is teaching Sanatana Goswami. And it is, it's a science that can be realized by devotees, and they can also recognize in another devotee that the other devotee understands that science. And but it's not a science in that empirical sense that we can show it to you even though you refuse to have respect for Krishna, and even though you refuse to, even though you're still envious of Krishna.
Only if you engage in devotional service.
Right.
But
we still, if we do science or if we do anything, we can try to serve Krishna through that. So Srila Prabhupada established Bhaktivedanta Institute. I think they're having a seminar in a week or two about Vedic cosmology. But that, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, whatever you do, do it for Krishna. Lord Krishna told Brahma, listen, O Vidhi, if you desire to create, you know, then do it as service to me. So if people who are devotees, who are scientists, can use their scientific knowledge and their rapport with the scientific community to convince other people to be devotees and explain that this is the highest knowledge, that's a good engagement for them. And it really has to be, I think, in the modern world, if Krishna consciousness is going to take over the world as a, you know, as the primary culture of the world, the scientists who occupy the position, like as a lawyer, when I'm in court, if I want an expert witness to testify about something, you know, scientific, then I have to have someone who's approved by this scientific community, because they really do have a kind of knowledge that's based on sense perception. That's also a pramana. It's just not as high as, you know, Shabda Brahman, which is self-illuminating. When you hear it, you become completely aware. So if we're going to actually make Krishna consciousness the dominant world culture, we have to capture the scientists who are in the position of being the intellectual authorities of society. Something else?
Yes. In the Bhagavad you have read, the Lord is addressed as Sanatana.
And I think you read also that Sanatana Goswami explains this further. That means, Gunatma means, Lord has a specific quality for each individual soul. What does that mean?
Yeah, where every individual soul realizes Krishna in his own way. Like when Krishna appeared in the arena to kill Kamsa, the Yadu dynasty, the different people, the wrestlers, everybody was perceiving Krishna differently. And just like every particle of snow is different, you know, that each individual person has their own way of perceiving and their own relationship with Krishna as well. And so I think that we were reading, Sanatana Goswami was saying that, you know, these qualities are there, we can talk about them abstractly, but when they appear in a person, then they actually manifest, and that Krishna manifested himself in the world to demonstrate all the godly qualities. But yeah, that's not really going to directly to your question, which is, you know, what does it mean that he has different qualities for each individual person? But each individual devotee will recognize him in his own way, and the non-devotees are recognizing him indirectly through their experiences of material phenomena, which are also coming from Krishna.
I remember reading in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation also on Jai Gadarma that Lord gives a specific quality, means each individual soul has a particular relationship with the Lord and he'll reciprocate through that quality. Cannot be duplicated, cannot be replaced. So in that sense, every soul is special to Krishna.
Mm.
And we have to respect to every soul.
Just like we were saying, every cowherd boy also has their own particular personality. Pundarik,
yeah,
who has something to say.
That sounds like God is subject to our perceptions. He's like they say, God is a product of our mind or something, or mental concoction that everyone perceives him differently. So he's dependent on that perception, or.
No, but he is dependent on his pure devotees in a way that he makes himself that way. His energies help him enjoy pastimes in that way. But no, he's completely independent. Abhigya Svarat, right? Janmadyasya Yutonvayadi Tiratas Charteshu Abhigya Svarat. So he's fully independent, and he's certainly independent of all the activities of even great demigods, even Brahman, Shiva, and so forth. But at the same time,
to engage in pastimes, he divides himself into Radharani and himself, and then he allows himself to be controlled, just like we sing every morning about how he's controlled by Mother Yashoda, that by her love he's actually controlled. He's actually frightened by her, and he's enjoying the pleasure of that. You know, everyone is always begging him to do things for them and things like that, but they're seeing him as the supreme controller, but the greatest devotees, the most intimate devotees who know him the best. Lord Brahma is certifying that that's the Vrijvasis, who don't know him as God, but they think he's their friend, he's their equal, he's their son, they have to train him. So he allows himself to be controlled by them. It's very mysterious how he engages his energies in a way that he allows himself to come under the control of his pure devotees. Is that right, or I defer to you?
I was just looking for some. Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Another angle. If
we got challenged like that.
There is a verse in Chaitanya-charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya was not giving darshan to King Pratap Rudra. There was a whole battle. I mean, subtle battle. Everybody was trying to approach in a different angle, and Mahaprabhu was not falling for any of this. But then Nityananda Prabhu broke the ice. He said, Jaddabhi Ishwar Tumi Parama Shatantra. As far ontological truth, you are supreme origin, and you are fully independent by your own right eternally. But then next line he says, Tathapi Sabhave Ho Prema Paratantra. But your nature, so then question is, who created his nature? He created by himself, for himself. So, but he says, Tathapi Sabhave Ho Prema Paratantra. By your nature, you are always subordinate to the love of other devotees.
His nature, no one created it. That's his nature. He is the cause of all causes. He has qualities. He has a nature. And one of his qualities is that he's subordinate to the love of his devotees. He has these different qualities. And so he's just like, you could think of the absolute truth as a person. Well, is he a mean person? Is he egotistical? Is he, what kind of person is he? Well, he's very kind, and he reciprocates just perfectly. He speaks all the languages of all the living entities and everyone, and he can perfectly reciprocate with anyone according to their mood and their activities and things. And for those who love him that much, he reciprocates with them by becoming subordinate to him. Those who love him in that way, in that intimate way, and that's his real, that's where he doesn't have any official position, he's really showing his actual personality. That's what the glories of Vrindavan and the Vrijvasis is, like the story always about William Gladstone playing with the child. You all know the story, he, in his office, he's Mr., Prime Minister, but at his home, he's his wife's, honey, and she says, did you remember to buy the things I asked you to get on the way home? And to his kids, he's daddy. And that's Krishna in his fullest and most complete form as the reservoir of all rasas. There's more complete rasas there in Vrindavan and the Madhurya rasa.
Okay.
Yes, Pundarik.
Every living entity is a devotee of Krishna. So how Krishna responds with every living entity? How is that?
Yeah, he responds just exactly according to how they deserve to be responded to. Yeya tamang prapadyante tangs tathaiva vachamyaham. If they desire to forget about Krishna and think that they are the enjoyer, he gives them the illusion. He gives them a material body that they can identify with and try to enjoy material nature through, so he creates the material manifestation. And in the spiritual world, The pure devotees worship him in different moods, and so he has expansive, unlimited Vaikuntha planets. There's an Ayodhya in the spiritual world where devotees love him as Ramachandra, and there's different worlds for different pure devotees who want to see him in different ways, and he responds to that. That doesn't mean he's a creation of the living entities. It means that it shows that he's a gentleman a lover who knows how to respond to different people who approach him in different forms of love. Is that satisfying? Or?
Atmaramata and Pararamata.
He's Atmarama, but he's Eko Bahunam Yogadithati Kaman. He's fulfilling the desires of every living entity. Every living entity is really a part of him, an expansion of him. Vibhinangsha, there's Vibhinangsha and Swangsha expansions.
But he's creating the need first, then he's coming to supply.
No, he's dividing himself. He's dividing himself into different personalities, and then he's enjoying the play. I mean, originally, in one sense, Krishna is the only thing, right? He's one, Eko Bahu Syat. He becomes many to enjoy, and he enjoys by actually having personal relationships with his shaktis, with his plenary expansions, and also with his jiva or limited expansions who have the marginal potencies, who have the tendency or the ability at least to be covered by his illusory energy. And then he, because they desire that, he creates the whole material universes and the whole material creation in order to give them a chance not only to forget him and then try to enjoy separately and experience the misery of that enjoyment mixed with misery, and then also to elevate themselves and come back to him where they can experience unlimited sukham akshayam ashnute, where they can enjoy unlimited happiness. Yes, Prabhu Cyrus.
Thank you, Prabhu. So Krishna is Atmaram. So he's fully satisfied within himself.
Yes.
But can Krishna enjoy by himself? I mean, can he actually enjoy by himself?
Sure, he can enjoy by himself, but he wants to enjoy more. His enjoyment is always expanding. So even by himself, he's self-satisfied. But the enjoyment of devotional service is much more enjoyable, much millions of times happier. Like for a devotee, we can understand. We could enjoy Brahmananda and just realize I'm not this body, I'm Brahmasmi. But then, you know, I'm Krishna's servant, I have to go get him his fan and fan him, yeah. Is a higher kind of enjoyment.
And does he enjoy the jivas who are, you know, the marginal, because we're marginal, the jivas who are covered, does Krishna enjoy them because they're also his expansions?
Yes, he enjoys their service. No. He allows them to suffer, gives them free will, but he also wants them to come back. Srila Prabhupada said, just like a man who has many wives, he may be enjoying with one wife, but he wants to wake up the other wife and enjoy with her too. So he wants the suffering living entities in the material world to also realize that they get out of their illusion, so that they can also participate in the transcendental, enjoyable pastimes. Hmm. It's getting late, and everybody's got to go to Harinam. Me too. I don't know. I think I have some things to do today that I have to take care of.
Thank you.
I apologize. Hare Krishna. Anything else? One last. Pundarik, you have a last... How does he become bewildered again when... Oh, the story about... Well, I don't know whether it's before or after. The whole idea of putting things in chronological sequence. Yeah. The whole sequence of that, you know, that things may happen in different days of Brahma, different universes, different. So, we to try to think, oh, this is before, that's after, it doesn't help us so much. It's not the way the Puranas are organized. I mean...